Hey guys, I just wanted to let you know that this podcast is presented by mybookie.ag and that if you use the promo code MATTEK, M-A-T-T-E-K, that you will get a 50% deposit bonus on your first deposit. And given that you are a listener to this podcast, I would assume you're relatively knowledgeable about sports, and I would trust you to try your edge on the online sportsbook. You can lay down some money and get in on the action at one of the safest online sportsbooks in the world. It's the only one that I am currently using. You can wager on all sorts of different outcomes on mybookie.ag, soccer, football, any major league, esports. You can even create your own player props, which is useful for me because if you know anything about me, I do enjoy a good player prop. So if you deposit using the promo code MATTEK, M-A-T-T-E-K, you get a 50% bonus when you deposit. And I will add this for listeners of the TakeCast. If you deposit using the promo code MATTEK and you send proof of it to me on Twitter, I will follow you on Twitter and you can have access to me via DMs whenever you want. That's the TakeCast bonus that I'm adding in association with the mybookie.ag deposit bonus. Now let's get back to the show. Hello everyone and welcome to the TakeCast. My name is Davis Matic. You can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. This week we are hanging out with Pat Mayo again, and this is actually kind of a special edition of the show. It'll be done in two parts. The first part, for all of you regular subscribers, is going to be on the regular iTunes feed. Normal length, long episode, getting in-depth into all the things that Mayo and I wanted to talk about. And then also we're going to be doing a part two that is for Patreon subscribers only. If you're listening to this right now and you're interested in hearing more of Pat and I talking, you can head on over to patreon.com/TakeCast, get access to that. Of course, you don't have to do that. The show will still be here for you. I'm not going anywhere. I would not abandon all of you who are just here to listen and to hang out. And if you do want to support the show without joining the Patreon, just go head on over to iTunes and leave a rating and review. And after a quick advertisement, we'll go ahead and get into the show. Daily Roto is a mostly proud sponsor of the TakeCast, a mostly sports podcast. TakeCast listeners can save 10% at Daily Roto with the promo code JANIS, J-A-N-I-S. If you are playing on DraftKings or FanDuel, Daily Roto will help you improve your daily fantasy results this fall and save time in the process with lineup optimizers, ownership projections, fantasy projections, premium content, and much more. They have all the good stuff that you want to help you make money at sports betting and daily fantasy. Their new lineup optimizer will let you build optimal GPP teams with stacks based on their projections faster than I can punt money off betting on Peter Uihlein. Sure, you can play the guys that I recommend each week, but shouldn't you also get advice from a proven daily fantasy winner like Drew Dinkmeyer? Yes, I do have better hair than Drew, but I also have his cell phone number, and that makes me a winner almost as much as it makes him a winner of the DraftKings Millionaire Maker. And it's not just fantasy. They have tools to bet on player props, golf matchups, and a customizable NFL game simulator for this fall. Head over to dailyrodeo.com/premium and save 10% with promo code JANIS today. All right, like to welcome back to the show everyone's favorite guest, Pat Mayo at the PME on Twitter. Pat, people loved the last show that we did.
I wasn't surprised. I thought it was a good show. I just enjoy talking to you. You thought it was going to be fucking terrible.
I didn't know if it was going to be terrible per se, but I definitely always am a little hesitant to put something out there that doesn't really have anything to do with sports, because my non-sports opinions are definitely even more contrarian and more unpopular than my sports opinions are.
I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think for the narrow group that you have and the people that listen to the show, I'd say that your takes are incredibly popular, both sports and non-sports. That's why people listen.
I mean, we need more people to listen, though. I need to say something just inflammatory enough to get on like the new and noteworthy page on iTunes. Like that's probably worth like $10,000 getting on that new and noteworthy page for a week.
Well, it sucks because you see this all happen a lot of the time when people like start a new podcast, especially someone who's like established. Like, I could get on the news and noteworthy page of iTunes if I shut down my podcast and just started a new one tomorrow.
Right. Like, if you go and look at that page, normally it's like some famous person who started like a horrible podcast that's not really about anything. Like, actually, let's just go look. Let's go right now. It is 9:13 Central Time, Thursday, October 4th. And right now what we have on the new and noteworthy page, I see Sarah Palin. I see a midterm elections podcast. And then, there's like other celebrity podcasts here, not anything that is particularly independent. Like, a lot of these are from like GQ or USA Today or How Stuff Works or Gimlet, like these podcasts, like, you know, studios basically is what the new and noteworthy page is.
All right. For me, because Canadian iTunes is different than American iTunes. Sure. So it's weird. Like, even reviews are different. They don't get meshed together. I had to figure this out for the longest time. Because I couldn't find any American reviews. I just assumed they were all one. And I was like, man, no one reviews my show. This is really weird. I always ask people to do it. It's like, you have 34 iTunes reviews. And then I noticed like 2 years later in the actual URL bar, there's a CA that's mixed into it, which is the Canadian code for basically everything. If you just delete right. that and get to the American page, I was like, oh, there's 1,000 iTunes reviews. This is much better.
I mean, that makes sense that they would be aggregated. I actually think I looked at yours and you have like 900 or something or so on the PME.
Perfect. I think I breached 1,000 this year because I was doing a giveaway, like begging people to do it.
Oh, the giveaway, like I gave away a copy of Madden for this show, two copies of Madden actually. And I think I got like 115 reviews or something from that. And then since then, there's been like 8 reviews. So if you're listening to this and you're like, you know what? I like Davis. I like his opinions. I like this podcast. Please, like, seriously, just take 3 seconds out of your day. If you have your iPhone, if you're listening to this on your iPhone right now, it will take you under 5 seconds to go click on it, scroll, and tap 5 stars. And even, I mean, maybe 15 seconds if you wanted to leave a review. But seriously, insanely helpful.
So here's the thing. Do we know if it's actually insanely helpful, or we just heard so many people say that over the years that we just think it is? Because no one knows how iTunes works.
No one knows how iTunes works, but I am 100% sure that the more engagement you get from people with your podcast in the app, it helps it go higher in the rankings. And like, when I get bored, like especially during the football offseason when all football podcasts are exactly the same, I'll literally just go to the iTunes store, go to categories, go to sports, and just scroll until I see something that looks interesting, whether it be the title of a podcast, whether it be the cover art. And if I click on it and it only has 4 reviews and 6 stars or whatever, not listening to it, not clicking. So you're helping someone else discover this podcast if you think it's good by doing that. And that goes for any podcast that you're interested in. Like, you should actually do that because it helps someone else listen to it.
I went to a live podcast last night.
Which podcast?
It's called The Greatest Generation, and it's a Star Trek review podcast. And it's
are you into that, or did you just want to go?
I mean, I like Star Trek, but the podcast itself is fucking hilarious.
I would do that. I would go to a live podcast.
It's far more offside than you would expect a Star Trek podcast to be.
I had tickets to go to the How Stuff Works one in Lawrence, Kansas. You know, sometime last year and just didn't end up being able to make it. I had something come up and I couldn't go, but I would totally go to a live podcast. Like, I'm into that. I don't see any reason why someone would not want to.
Well, I really want to do a live one. I think that like, I did like a live cuss corner, people would really enjoy that. But I always like, they got like 500 people to come up to this thing last night. But like, I know how many people listen to my show. I feel like I could get like 200 or 300 people. But I'd always be fearful that I would set it up and like one person would show up.
I mean, you definitely would have a much greater chance of getting people to show up to your podcast than I would of mine. You're also in a good location. Like Toronto, there's just like a lot of people. People would be filtering in and out.
But here's the weird thing. No one listens to my show in Toronto. No one. Like they're rough sketches of like demographic breakdowns and like where people, like 3% of my audience is Canadian.
I mean, that's like most people who are going to want to consume NFL content are going to be American. I just feel like that's true.
And Canadians don't, I mean, it's a reason, like, I used to work in Canadian media and, like, try to get on TV in Canada. And it's funny, I had to go to the States to get onto TV in Canada, as it turned out, when I left TV. But I just, my personality doesn't mesh with what Canadians want to see at all. I'm far too forceful.
No, you're very non-Canadian. Like, I think most people who met you would assume not Canadian unless you told them. Like, you don't have an accent. You don't like none of the things that people associate with Canada are you.
No, I'm more of like, especially when it comes to like TV personality wise too. Like, don't want to say Skip Bayless, but that's more of the template than
You're like very New York. That's what I would assume if I met you.
Yeah, people always just say Northeast, and I'm technically from the Northeast because I'm from east of Maine. So
that
would go hand in hand. But like Canadian like sports TV is so horrendous. Like, it's just people being nice to each other, and it's
just hockey and baseball, and then a little bit of CFL in the summer, right?
Oh God, no! Baseball's way down that list, unless the Jays are really awesome. It's hockey, curling, CFL.
Gas. That's right. I forgot curling is like a huge deal.
Curling's like, it's mind-boggling. Like, hockey started last night, and we go to a bar, like the bar that we went to go watch football every single week that I've lived in Toronto, just because they had like 38 TVs. And no one was going there when we first started going there. So all the bartending staff let us have control of the remote. So we could set up all the TVs exactly how we wanted them. So we could watch every single game that was going on at once, which was awesome. That place shut down. So now we're at a new place. The hardest part is like, for now actual hockey started. So it's not so bad. But before, be like, hey, the Sunday night game's going on. Oh yeah, but Leafs preseason is on. You're like, that gets
so the NFL only gets one screen and 37 other ones are the Leafs preseason game.
Exactly. And that's the one reason we love this place, because someone's like, hey, put on the CFL. I'm like, go fuck yourself. I used to drink on Sundays. I don't drink on Sundays anymore. I have to work too much. But when I used to drink on Sundays, it would get bad with me basically trying to fight everyone at the bar to keep them off changing it to hockey, CFL, and fucking curling. Although
Do they even play CFL on Sunday during the NFL season anymore?
I think it's just Friday, Saturday. I actually have no idea.
I actually was kind of following the CFL this year a little bit, and then obviously once NFL got into full swing, it totally fell by the wayside.
Yeah, so that's odd. So one of the things, right before we came on, you had brought up sort of the idea of, because this is the third time I've been on now, you're starting to repeat guests. There's currency inconvenience, I think, that if you talk to me, you know I'm going to come on. When you have to start doing work to go get guests, and I fall into the same trap too. I have the same guests on all the time because I know, like, hey, we need to film Monday at, let's say, 10 o'clock. I know this guy is available every Monday at 10 o'clock. I might as well just use him every Monday at 10 o'clock. And say, like, the hardest show for me to book during NFL season is the DraftKings show, because that's a show that I try to mix it up with different people from around the industry.
Right.
But, like, if I'm, like, planning a week out and I try to, like, email someone and they don't get back to me, like, almost instantaneously, it's like I got to send out, like, three more emails to three other people to make sure that when Wednesday comes that I actually have someone. And you want to give people notice for it. But, like, do you think it hurts the overall scope of the show when you can't have as many new people on as possible?
It definitely hurts, not even like people's enjoyment of it or the engagement of it, but it definitely hurts getting more people involved in it. Like, the best response I get to episodes of this show are when I get people who are not from this world at all. Like the episode I did with the last episode of this show that I did with the offensive coordinator from Murray State, like that got the best reaction overall. Like, that got the most response. And then even going a little bit further out of our circle, when I did the episode with Danny Kelly and Ben Baldwin, who were like two like really math heavy sort of NFL fans. Well, Ben is, Danny's like kind of more of a film watcher, but that was like out of the normal scope of the show, in the sense that it wasn't you, it wasn't Drew and Mike, it wasn't Josh Hermsmeyer, it wasn't Denny, it wasn't Jonathan Bales. Like, it wasn't someone who's like really into DFS Twitter. I got better results with that, but like scheduling that for the three of us was difficult. Like, we had to like, okay, when are you free? I'm free now. We have a 45-minute window where all three of our schedules line up and we can do it. Whereas when it's with me and you or me and Drew, and also another thing is all of us work from home, whereas a lot of people, you know, in the world don't just have 9 to 5 free. Like they just don't have that time to just do whatever they want, you know? Whereas like I'm just kind of sitting at home and yeah, I have deadlines for like my fantasy football stuff, but I can like, I can create an hour or two here and there. And that's actually a big hassle with getting guests is finding people who are free 9 to 5 the same way that I am.
Yeah, like I go into the office most days. I try to stay home on Thursdays unless I really have something to film during the NFL season because I'm there Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Like I need a day where I just have to stay at home. I can do my work from here if need be. But like one of the reasons we had to adjust our show is Cust finally got a real job, so we can't just record it anytime, whenever anymore.
Yeah.
So we have to wait for him to get off work. It actually worked out for the purposes of scheduling and releasing the show to get it out earlier. But it's not just the scheduling, though, with people from outside of, like, the people that you know or the DFS community and people that work from home. There's a back and forth that could really go wrong with people you've never talked to before. That's why I really, like, I like swing season for golf for me. Like I like having as many people on as possible, as many different voices. I always think that's a really smart thing for any show to try to do.
Right.
But I'm not going to test out someone new at the Masters for golf kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like you need to pick your spots with it. And you know, when you're, you know, in the flow of doing stuff, sometimes convenience can trump that. But like, I've done some bad shows with people I've never talked to before. Like I can't remember the first time that you and I ever did a show together. I'm guarantee you it was bad.
Probably a long time ago. Like at this point, like it was probably like 4 years ago.
But just that familiarity now, like I didn't need to see you in order to know when you're going to talk. Although when we did the show the other day and you and Mike started talking, you confused the hell out of my director. He didn't know who to switch to.
Well, I mean, getting Leonie and I on a show together, we're going to talk over each other the entire time because him and I are going to have like 30% of things where we just don't see eye to eye at all.
My producer did a smart thing. Like 5 minutes into the show, he's like, I can't figure out who's who. He just put you in like a split screen box and just put you both up at the same time.
Smart. Yeah.
That's good. It helps to have a good producer. So here's what I want to ask you about. I saw someone just fluttered through my Twitter timeline and people have been really big upping this all the time. There's no need to go to college. You learn how to do things on your own.
Big time disagree, especially if you're from a smaller town in the United States. I can't speak to the Canadian experience, but if you are from a town in the United, like if you are from a town in the United States and not a city, the idea that you can just go through life in that town and then when you're 20 or whatever, you go move to Chicago or Dallas or whatever state it is you live in, the analog of a bigger city. I'm from Kansas, so small town in Kansas to Kansas City. No, 100% you need to have an intermediate. You don't need, it's very helpful to have an intermediate step between that. Like a lot of what I learned in college, a lot of how college prepared me for the real world was like teachers who wouldn't accept late work or getting punished for not going to class or getting into disagreements with people, having experiences with people from different backgrounds, meeting people of color, meeting people with different religious backgrounds. Like I think a lot of, like it's very cliche to say that, but I think that's really what college offers you more so than just the education that you're paying for.
Sure. So you're talking about the socialization aspect of college, but maybe some people aren't concerned about that. Like maybe,
I mean, it's true. Maybe they aren't.
So do you, I'm just talking about from like a workforce perspective. Like I'm thinking about myself and most of the stuff that I do now, I learned how to do sort of by myself, but I also got an undergraduate degree. I went and got a professional degree in broadcasting, and I learned all that stuff along the way. And then I just learned off of what the base that they gave me. I used basically the internet and trial and error to figure out a lot of stuff by myself. So do you need that certain base? Like too many people go to college straight up. Like people don't need to go to college, but I think that people underutilize things like community college or trade school as a way to get a base into something that they want to do. And I think maybe you're right that going to college, and I mean, for me, it was a thing that like when you go to college, there's the socialization aspect and expanding your mind and really doing all that stuff. But A, people aren't concerned about that stuff, and you can't force people to do that. And people can do that on their own too, if you know they're not closed off. If you were 18 and you didn't move to Kansas City to, let's say, go to college, you just moved to downtown Kansas City, just being around there for 4 years would probably socialize you up pretty quick, wouldn't it?
I would have been really overwhelmed though, because I was really not an adult when I went to college. I was like really, I just was not ready for a lot of the responsibilities. Like my freshman year at college, I failed a class. I like got on academic probation. Like I was not ready for the responsibilities of like not even adulthood, but like honestly, just like, you know, advanced adolescence. I was just not ready. I was super immature, and I needed really what college does for a lot of people is it treats them to be responsible for their own behavior and their own consequences, with like a little bit of a safety net. There's like a little bit of a safety net in college where like, you know, you can have student loans, so you don't have to work a full-time job. Like that's a big thing. That really helped me out. 'Cause like without student loans, like I would have been pretty screwed in terms of like paying for college and getting through the college experience. And I don't, that could be different in Canada too. I don't know exactly how that works, but for the first time really having to have consequences for like my irresponsibility was pretty helpful in college.
I could see that. I lived at home during college until my third year, 'cause I'm from a university town. We have 7 colleges, in Halifax. So a lot of people come from basically away to the East Coast to come to these schools. They're all really good. So, yeah. And they're all, I mean, all Canadian colleges. I think I went to the 5th most expensive school in Canada. And at the time it was like $5,500 a year. So
yeah,
it's not cheap, but it's also not super pricey, to go to college. I basically flunked out my first year. And I would recommend that when I have kids, that there's no chance that they don't go away. Like no matter what the price is, I do think that's a valuable growing up experience, because you got it through basically, like you said, in like 1 year becoming an adult. I didn't become an adult until well after I graduated from college, because there was just no consequences to the school that I went to. There was no class on Fridays. You know, no one really cared what you did. You could skate by and basically get C's and C pluses without doing anything. So it didn't really help me whatsoever.
I mean, so the same is true of my college experience. Like I did not work particularly hard until right at the end when I was in the English and creative writing department. And so my final was like a giant 30-page research paper that was like going to be put, like we were as a senior class, we put on a exhibit like with like all this research and stuff we did into like early American life, which was like on campus, and it was like actually a lot of work, and it was cool to be a part of. And that was like the first time I can remember working really hard on something for school. Took me until the end, but I did do it. But also I started doing this while I was in college. I started my own website. I started a podcast. I started working for other companies while I was in college, and that helped teach me like a lot of like time management skills and a lot of the value of my own time. Like putting a monetary value on my time was something I really learned over that time period.
Yeah, I say the only things that, I mean, I learned how to smoke in college. I learned how to get fat in college. I learned how to do nothing in college, and I learned how to smoke weed in college. That was about it, and that's just what I did every day. Ate poorly, smoked cigarettes, and was just high all the time.
Yeah, I did. I did eat poorly, and I did smoke cigarettes in college. That was like a real thing that I like had to. Can't do that now. Hey guys, I wanted to take a minute to tell you about my friends over at PowerHourDFS.com. They have an entire suite of daily fantasy sports tools to help you set your lineups this season. You know, they have all the tools that you've come to expect from a tout site. They have a lineup optimizer with floor, median, and ceiling projections. They also have some unique tools that help quantify injuries to an offensive line or provide advanced metrics and route data around a wide receiver versus a specific cornerback matchup. They have college football daily fantasy information, which not every DFS site does have. You can get their entire suite of tools along with a game-by-game analysis for every slate, showdown-specific content, a cheat sheet with cash and GPP rankings, matchup data, betting content from yours truly, and much more every week from PowerHourDFS.com. And if you use the promo code MATTEK, M-A-T-T-E-K, at checkout, you can save $20 off of your subscription. How's the quitting smoking going?
Uh, it's it's going okay. I broke down. I succumbed to the pressure. I was out drinking and I had a cigarette with someone. Then I had to like leave because I was like, if I stay here, I'm going to smoke an entire
pack. I'm just going to smoke a whole pack.
So, like, I got to go. I do think that there, I don't know what the regulation is around it, but like, I assume you can go to the store and like buy Lucy's if you know the right store, right?
What single cigarettes?
Yeah, like single cigarettes, which is illegal to do, to sell single cigarettes. But I've always had an idea of like the going out pack, 5-pack of cigarettes, $5. For the people that don't want to buy the pack because they're not smokers, but want to smoke when they go out drinking. Because the way that people get hooked back on cigs
is buying the whole pack and they have them left the next morning.
They have them in the pack, like they've smoked 3 out of the pack, and they go home and wake up the next morning. It's like, oh, I have 17 left. Might as well smoke them.
But yeah, that's a good business idea, and it's such a good business idea that I'm sure someone's had it before.
That's why I think it's illegal.
And there's some legal thing against it, yeah.
But people would talk that, like, hey, the argument would be from a health perspective, I would think, that you don't want to have, like, a bridge. You either want people to, like, people are either smoking and there's no in-between for that. You want them to stop smoking. And having a 5-pack or a 10-pack or a 7-pack or something like that would be a bridge to keep people smoking longer than they would have to. But as a pragmatist, I would think this actually makes a lot more sense. It seems like just laws in general, especially drug laws, seem to be ones created by people that have never experienced how this actually works.
Right.
So like most anti-smoking laws are just by people who hate cigarettes and give you like really dirty looks if you're smoking outside. Although they weigh like 500 pounds, be like, yeah, listen, you're gonna die from you with heart disease, so like, fuck off. The anti-smoking people are the preachiest people on earth, and it's very annoying. And I get it, like, people shouldn't smoke. I'm trying not to smoke. I get it, but like, you know, you cut me some slack here. But I think there is a pragmatic view of being like, I know what gets. I've seen it happen to all my friends. Anyone who smokes, like, everyone has the relapse. Everyone has the cigarette. That I think these 5-packs would actually help people. Because that is what I described of buying the pack when going out because you just want one or two and just getting stuck with a pack full of cigarettes is how everyone gets hooked back. Everyone.
The more cynical view would be these companies that produce and sell cigarettes, they don't want to help people quit. They want to help people keep smoking. So there's not like, well, there might be a short-term windfall from this being a new and exciting product. Over the long term, they would probably project that more people would smoke less if this was a thing. So they want to keep they want to keep people with the leftover cigarettes in the morning, for sure.
I think that's true, but I think more and more people aren't smoking anymore. So you want to have something to keep people engaged with smoking, even on a temporary basis, so you don't lose them completely as a customer, and you could really jack up the price of them.
I mean, smoking is not cool. Smoking used to be kind of cool.
I disagree. Smoking's still by far the coolest.
I mean, you and I can hold that opinion, but the way that it is portrayed and the way that smoking is thought of in the mass consciousness, not cool. Not cool at all.
Well, yeah, I know that. When people are coming by being like, oh my God, just smoke. My wife just gives me heat all the time. Like, it was one of the main reasons I quit. So she would stop nagging me, but like, you smell like smoke. Like, yeah, I smell awesome.
Yeah, I smell great. I actually, even as a former smoker, do not, the smell of a lit cigarette still smells good to me, but the smell of like stale smoke, like on the shirt or something, horrendous.
It's because you can actually smell it now. When you smoke, people who smoke can't smell, like whenever, like when I walk into a room and like my wife smells my jacket because it smells like smoke, smokers can't smell that. Like I can never smell smoke on myself because I was just smoking all the time.
Yeah.
And I can smell more now that I've stopped for like 3 weeks. Like I can
also a thing you never had to deal with is I have really long hair and it just stays in your, even when you shower and shampoo and everything, it just stays in your hair. Never.
Really? That's what you get for being a fucking hippie.
I just don't like paying for haircuts, man.
Why don't you get, my buddy Paul, the producer of my show, does the exact same thing. He hates paying for haircuts, so he bought himself a pair of clippers for like $30.
I also do. I mean, it's a vanity thing. I really like having long hair, but I refuse to go pay like my friends here in Kansas City. They'll just go pay $30 for a haircut once a month.
Yeah,
plus tip.
I worked out a deal with the barber next to work that I can come in for a haircut anytime I want if I pay him $30 a month. But I need to get my haircut like legit every 7 days.
I mean, you're on TV. You got to keep those lines sharp.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, well, you can tell, like, when I'm, like, I slacked for, like, a month because I was away. I was at a wedding and just I was too lazy to go get a haircut. My hair looks stupid when it's long. Like, there's the in-between period of my hair being, like, longer and shorter is a really bad look.
It just I look like a large infant child with short.
Yeah, that's part of your brand, though.
Yeah, the long hair, it's definitely part of my brand. I'm not, I like, at this point, it would be shocking. I haven't got a haircut in 3 years, and I don't foresee the next time I really would get one.
So you mentioned that you learned sort of like responsibility and accountability by starting a website and starting work in sort of this business.
Yeah.
And I mean, I kind of did the same thing, whether it was through like just through work and just starting to plan media stuff, whether it was writing, whether it was video, whether it was podcasting, just the ability to be organized is so key. And like you mentioned, like understanding what your time is worth, because I used to do so much shit for free, which I mean, in retrospect, I'm glad I did it, but I didn't realize how long I was being taken advantage of. Before, like, there are certain things that you can do for free that are very beneficial, no matter who you are, whether it's in terms of exposure, whether it's in terms of experience. But like, I remember when I was writing for Roto Experts and like pumping out content for free, it made me a better writer, sure. But at a certain point, there was a break where I really shouldn't have been doing that stuff for free anymore. So I think understanding that part of it is fantastic. But a lot of this is, if you're a writer, like especially like an internet writer, no matter what the business is, whether it's fantasy sports, whether it's politics, whether it's making lists about best ice creams. If it's something that you do consistently, you learn time management and you do know what stuff is worth, but you're basically a business unto yourself. Like, you're never going to make money and never understand this stuff, I don't think, at least, unless you have a very high level job, like something like a doctor or a lawyer or something like that, without owning your own business. Even if it's a very like micro business and you can be a part of a whole bunch of different other businesses, but like, what would you say like your job is? If someone asked you what your job is, what do you tell them?
To be extremely online. My job is to monetize the fantasy football knowledge that I have in my head, whether it be on a podcast, whether it be through written content. Like I would just say I'm like a football writer to people.
Yeah. So if you were talking to me, you would tell me one thing. If like your parents' friends, you're like,
yeah,
oh,
I just say I'm a football writer or like a data analyst.
Oh, data analyst sounds pretty good.
Data analyst sounds pretty cool, and it's not really a lie.
Yeah, I mean, that's something you could put on LinkedIn if you had LinkedIn.
Oh, I have a LinkedIn.
I had to change my LinkedIn because I was just president of Mondays for a while, and people were like, this is stupid. I was like, yeah. You're never going to get a job through LinkedIn. It's like, I've never got a job I've interviewed for, A. B.
No, same.
Does anyone get a job through LinkedIn?
No, everyone gets jobs through like knowing someone. That's easily the way to get the jobs you want and the jobs that good jobs is just through knowing someone.
But if you're gonna make that real money, you do need to own something. I'm convinced of that.
Correct. You do need to own something.
Yeah, that could be as something as like I remember reading this thing Levitan put out. They said the most valuable asset that he has is his Twitter account, and he's probably right.
Yeah, I wouldn't sell my Twitter account for $100,000. No, not a chance.
I don't think I would either. It's worth more.
Like if I had to shut down my Twitter account, like I'd basically just be like anyone else that exists in the world. Like I'd just be a broke boy.
Yeah, but just because you talk about the different ways you can monetize things. Twitter, for me and for a lot of like people in our space, is the way that you can monetize what you do, whether that's monetizing information, whether that's monetizing tools, whether that's getting someone to come to you and be like, hey, you know, I'll cut you an affiliate fee if you throw this out here. Like that's all viable for, and when you work in this sort of business, like anyone who works on the internet primarily needs to find these different ways to do that, because one thing isn't going to pay you.
No. One thing is not, like, if I just did one thing, I would not be able to live the lifestyle to which I have become accustomed. You know, like, that's just like, I make money from writing. I make money from consulting. I make money from doing podcasts. I just started a Patreon. I play daily fantasy every day of the week. Like, I have, like, at any given time, I have like 11 revenue streams.
Yeah. So, I mean, it works both one way and two way. The shitty part is you always have to be working. There's no real.
Does not feel great to just like pretty much always be attached to your phone, knowing that like if something could happen at any minute that could like make or break your week.
Oh, absolutely. And like I was telling you, like you know, I kind of have to be at the, even on Saturdays, I got to be sort of like up to date on what's going on. Shit can change real quick. And just staying up on, even if it's only like 2-3 hours a day, or just constantly monitoring things during the day, it just saves me so much time that if I had went in, like, if I woke up Sunday morning cold, not knowing what happened from like Thursday night to Sunday morning, I'd be fucked. I'd have to get up at like 3 a.m. to go study for 8 hours to go do a live show kind of thing. So just monitoring everything that goes on at all times and always staying plugged in makes me more efficient. It also, I think, is like killing my soul.
It does. It kills your soul a little bit. There's no doubt about it. Like there's no denying that just that constant state of like feeling like you have to be hyper aware is like soul crushing.
And you never get to take like the only time, like, cause I shut, if I go out drinking, and I rarely drink during football season, but if I do, I basically leave my, I give my phone to my wife or I leave my phone at home.
I mean, yeah. And I don't even, I couldn't even do that. I don't think I ever would.
It just, there, the upside for bad decision-making, especially now, like with an audience, is very high. And I don't, like, know if it would ever happen, but it could happen. And I just don't want that out there.
Being away from my phone is just like too anxiety inducing.
I don't really, it's funny. Like I hear a lot of people talk about anxiety. I don't quite get it. I don't suffer from anxiety whatsoever.
It must be very nice. It must be very nice to live through that lifestyle.
Well, I don't know. Like, I mean, my wife has anxiety as well. And like, she tries to describe it to me. I don't quite get it. And it seems to be unique to every single person, but like, is it, are there certain types of it? Like it, like for you, like if you're away from your phone, that causes anxiety, but that probably never happened until you had a phone to begin with. It's like that.
I mean, sure. But there are always ways for like the anxious mind to manifest. And I think it's undeniable that phone addiction, screen time, all these things that are designed to like keep the forefront of our minds busy make anxiety worse, because when those things are taken away, when the opiate of entertainment is or content is taken away, then you know your brain just gets really busy and it's used to all this stimulation, and then all that stimulation is taken away and your brain just doesn't know what to do.
In the future, do you think we're going to look more like people in Star Trek or people in WALL-E?
WALL-E, 100%. I'm not close.
Oh no, that's bad news.
I don't even think there is an argument that exists that people are becoming more evolved or more intelligent. I think we are going the exact opposite way.
Okay, so do you want to do something fun or something more serious?
Let's end on something fun, and then after this topic, we're going to go over to the Patreon for the second part of the show.
Okay, I have like two super short ones here that are more fun.
All right.
Pornhub put in skip points to tell you what's going on in the video. Genius. Just want to throw that out there.
It's marketing. Marketing at its finest.
I don't want to watch the lead-in story. I just want to click to the fucking and like sure. The different positions. It's great. There are some videos that don't have it. It's not good. Also, can anyone become a real estate agent?
Yes. There's like a very small licensing thing. But yeah, and it's not, I don't think it's even really particularly hard. Like, I don't know. It does, seems like something that would be very simple, don't you think?
Well, I just see it on my Facebook feed all the time that these people who were like 30-something that I went to school with, who were like morons, like, hey, I'm a real estate agent now. And they do that pose where they're leaning up with their arms crossed against something. But like, can you make, like, I know some people make money being a real estate agent, but I assume most of these people aren't doing anything. They're just
it just kind of depends. Like, you just have to get lucky, right? Like, you just have to, like, get one really good customer or get like an area of town to yourself or something like that. I assume it's like most things. It just rewards your time. Eventually, at first you make like no money, and then eventually you become like the guy, and then you make a bunch of money.
Well, here's the thing though. Real estate agents are actually useless.
Well, yeah, you would be much better off like knowing the basics and doing it yourself, right?
Not even that. Like the lawyer fees for real estate are incredibly low. But in reality, they're actually the only people you need to do anything. You need the lawyer to look over the deal, put stuff in escrow. He's the one who holds it, not the real estate agent. That real estate agents are actually useless. The only thing that they have is access to the listings. And now that the internet exists, it's a huge scam that they're going
through. They're like something from a bygone era. Like they were useful in like 1975.
But people haven't caught on that they actually are useless. We talk about all these jobs that are antiquated and out of date. Real estate agents are actually at the very top of that list. Just no one talks about it.
I mean, I was flummoxed. This is a great point to end this podcast on before we get over to the Patreon side. Travel agencies
still exist. I mean,
when my grandma went on like a trip like 2 months ago and told me how like the travel agency set it up for her, got everything, bleep blah blue. And the whole time she was telling me this, I was just like, I could not believe that is a business that exists in 2018. Is that possible? Who are the people that use it?
Well, your grandma and like my grandma. Actually, my grandma doesn't, because we're from my grandfather was a pilot, so they just be like, hey, we're going here now. They still fly for free, so they don't give a shit where they go. They show up to places and do stuff. But it's older people. It's the older generation that not even like my mom. Shockingly, my mom is going to be 51 soon, which is probably pretty young. But that age doesn't need travel agents. They can go online. Like 60 and above probably still use travel agents. So once these people die out, which frankly is going to happen at some point, I'm convinced of that, these businesses like real estate agents, like everyone who's coming up with the online world are just going to box out. Like I went to a travel agent before my honeymoon. I was planning my honeymoon online, looking at different rates. I just went to the travel agency that's like by work, and I asked them, I was like, hey, do you have any particular rates that are better than what I'm finding right here? And the girl just looked at me. She's like, God, no. She's like, just do what you're doing. Basically said, she just knew that I wasn't going to be.
Yeah. You have a Twitter account. You're not the target audience.
Yeah. And like they were waiting for my grandma to show up being like, oh yeah. It's like, you can definitely pay. We'll get you a 10% off the flight and like jack up. I don't even know how they make money, to tell you the truth, because everything can be like, what was the last time anyone paid full price for a hotel room?
My guess would be that they make money from the hotels and the airlines paying them for a referral service. Like they refer people to airline X and hotel X and car service X.
So it's like if I say go to dailyroto.com,
yes, this promo code. It's like affiliate deals.
I would get a cut of that, and the travel agents would do the same thing. But like that business evaporates overnight one day. And I think that real estate agents will be exactly the same way.
I mean, I'm sure there are a bunch of jobs right now that people do that people are worried about like robots or automation taking jobs away, but the internet is like a way bigger threat to like those service industry jobs.
Oh, absolutely. Like even certain things, like when I showed up to the airport and there's a new restaurant, actually it's a really cool restaurant. My wife and I went, it's like right next to work. They don't have waiters. They have like two waiters. You just punch in what you want on the iPad that's on the table.
Yeah.
Think about how
if you ran a restaurant, why would you not do that?
Well, I mean, and people are talking about like, we have a new premier in Ontario, like basically our governor. People call him Canada's Trump, which he's not. Like he's just kind of a loudmouth asshole, but you know, he's not like a crazy person. But right. The minimum wage here was supposed to go up to $15 an hour. And all that did was basically make small businesses cut hours for people or fire people. It's like, we can't afford to pay these people $15 an hour, especially when we were paying them like 11. So it cut back on people's hours to basically pay them the same. So no one really benefited. He moved that back down and people were like, oh, how dare you take money out of the poor's hands, that kind of thing. And he's like, listen, whether you're making $13 an hour or making $15 an hour, you're equally as poor. Like it's not changing your quality of life whatsoever. And all it's doing is just taking away some of these jobs. So as a business owner, like people don't seem to understand that you're going to try to make as much money as possible. And then people are like, well, if you can't afford to pay minimum wage, you can't afford to run a business, which is not true. Like my business is me and one other person. If I had another person that I had to pay, I wouldn't make any money at all.
Yeah. Like I have my own LLC basically for like tax filing purposes, like Davis Matic LLC basically. And yeah, I'm employing myself and anyone else that I do pay. I have expenses, right? Like I pay to host this podcast. I pay to own the domain name to davismatic.com and stuff like that. If I was hiring someone to be my assistant at $8 an hour or whatever, like poor, send me to the poorhouse.
Imagine having to pay them $15 an hour.
Yeah. RIP. So now we are going to head on over to part two of the conversation. If you are not a Patreon subscriber, that's okay. You just got a full free episode, no charge. And if you want to hear more, head on over to patreon.com/takecast. If not, leave a rating and review on iTunes, and thank you for your time.